survey the wondrous cross on which the Prince of Glory died. My riches gained I count but loss, and pour contempt on all my pride. See from his head his hands, his feet, sorrow and love flowed me gold down. Did e'er such love and sorrow compose so rich a crown? Were the whole realm of nature that were an offering far too small, love so amazing, so divine, demands my soul, my life, my all. When I survey the wondrous cross on which the Prince of Glory died, my riches gain I count but loss, and for contempt on all my pride.
Please join me in the responsive reading. The words are projected on the screen. He grew up before him like a tender shoot and like a root out of dry ground. Nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by mankind.
A man of sorrows and familiar with suffering. Like one from whom men hide their faces, he was despised and we esteemed him not.
On the first day of the festival of unleavened bread, when it was customary to sacrifice the Passover lamb, Jesus' disciples asked him, "Where do you want us to go and make preparation for you to eat the Passover?" So he sent two of his disciples, telling them, "Go into the city, and a man carrying a jar of water will meet you. Follow him. Say to the owner of the house he enters, the teacher asks, where is my guest room, where I may eat the Passover with my disciples? He will show you a large room upstairs, furnished and ready. Make preparations for us there. The disciples left, went into the city, and found things just as Jesus had told them. So they prepared the Passover. When evening came, Jesus arrived with the 12.
It was a different kind of Passover, to say the least. I remember right when I sat down, Philip leaned over to me and whispered, hey, Thomas, I feel like something special is going to happen tonight. I just looked over at him and said, I doubt it. I was wrong. Jesus got up from the table. He walked over, picked up a basin of water and a towel. I remember thinking to myself, what's Jesus doing with the foot water? I doubt he's going to wash anybody's feet. I was wrong. Jesus kneeled over and began washing Bartholomew's feet. Bart just sat there, didn't say anything. He didn't move. Jesus finished and went on to wash James and Andrew's and the rest of our feet. I remember thinking to myself, this is so strange and yet so wonderful. I doubt anybody's going to say anything right now. I was wrong. Guess who broke the silence? Peter.
No way was he going to wash our feet. Well, I mean, he could wash other people's feet if he wanted to, but he wasn't going to wash mine. So I looked at him, I said, Jesus, you're not going to wash my feet. I mean, you're the king. He just looked at me and he said, well then, you can have nothing to do with me. Ouch. Okay, wash my feet, wash my hands, wash my whole body if you have to. And Jesus just looked at me and he said, no, just your feet will be fine, Peter. In the midst of washing our feet, he teaches us servanthood.
Then Jesus grabbed some bread and some wine. He said it represented his body. He then blessed it and served it to us. He said, all of you will lose faith in me tonight. I remember thinking to myself, lose faith in you, Jesus? Never. But I just sat there. I didn't say anything.
Well, I couldn't just sit there. I had to say something. I said, Jesus, I love you. The others may fall away, but I never will. You can count on me. Jesus looked at me and smiled. He said, Peter, you'll deny me 3 times before tomorrow morning. Oh. Next thing I knew, we were wrapping things up and heading out to the garden to pray.
In the garden, Jesus told his friends to sit and wait for him while he prayed. He walked just a few yards away before falling to his knees. He leaned against a large stone and pressed his tired face on the surface. The night air had become cool, and so was the stone. The sweat on his face and his hands began to chill him. Finally, Jesus lifted himself on his knees and pressed his hands together so tightly that his knuckles turned white. Father, he said, if it is possible, I don't want to die this way. But if you want me to, I will. Jesus closed his eyes. He prayed so hard that blood began to seep from the pores on his skin and fall to the ground like thick clots of mud.
Once we got to the garden, things just got crazy. Jesus asked Peter, James, and myself to go further in the garden with him and pray. And we did. We tried. We kept falling asleep.
There. There, the one praying by himself. Now the others, they're going to try and create a scene. But the one that I kiss, that's the one you take. Now 30 pieces, right? 30 pieces of silver, that's what we agreed upon? Yes? All right. Now, just forget about the rest of them. The one that you want, It's the one that I kiss on the cheek.
A kiss? Judas betrayed Jesus with a kiss of a friend? Then it got crazy. Peter grabbed a sword and he cut off this guy's ear. And Jesus? He just reached down, picked up the ear, and put it back on the guy's head, as if nothing had happened. But then they took him. I'd love to tell you that we fought for him, but we didn't. Everybody ran. I ran. I'm so ashamed.
What have I done? What have I done? Was I so stupid to think that 30 pieces? I've killed him. I've killed him. I crucified Jesus.
Those who had arrested Jesus took him to Caiaphas the high priest, where the teachers of the law and the elders had assembled. But Peter followed him at a distance, right up to the courtyard of the high priest. He entered and sat down with the guards to see the outcome. The chief priests and the whole Sanhedrin were looking for false evidence against Jesus so that they could put him to death, but they did not find any, though many false witnesses came forward. Finally, two came forward and declared, "This fellow said, 'I am able to destroy the temple of God and rebuild it in 3 days.'" Then the high priest stood up and said to Jesus, "Are you not going to answer? What is this testimony that these men are bringing against you?" But Jesus remained silent. The high priest said to him, "I charge you under oath by the living God. Tell us if you are the Messiah, the Son of God." "You have said so," Jesus replied. "But I say to all of you, from now on you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the Mighty One and coming on the clouds of heaven." Then the high priest tore his clothes and said, "He has spoken blasphemy. Why do we need any more witnesses? Look, now you have heard the blasphemy. What do you think?" "He is worthy of death," they answered.
"Do you refuse to speak to me?" I asked. "Don't you realize? I have the power to set you free or to crucify you." He just answered me, "You would have no power over me if it were not given to you from above. On the outside, I stayed strong, but on the inside, I was astounded. I knew from that point forward, I would try to set Jesus free. But the Jews, they kept shouting, 'If you let this man go, you are no friend of Caesar's. Any man who claims to be a king opposes Caesar.' I couldn't let them see that I was weak. I needed to show them I was in control. 'What is it this man has done to you?'
'Crucify!'
'I have found him guilty of nothing.'
'Crucify!'
'He's not a revolutionary.'
'Crucify!'
'He's no prophet.'
'Crucify!'
'He is a danger to no one.'
'Crucify him!'
'What has this man done?'
'Crucify! Crucify!'
'I'll whip him. Will that satisfy you?'
'Crucify!' 'But
crucify. What has he done?'
'Crucify!'
'He does not need to be crucified.'
'Crucify!'
'What has he done?'
'Crucify!'
'Fine. He's yours.'
'Crucify! Crucify! Crucify!'
'I wash my hands of his blood.' 'This is not my doing. You will take responsibility for his death.'
'Crucify! Crucify! Crucify!'
I gave them the chance to set him free. This was their doing. I washed my hands of the whole situation as soon as it was done.
None of it made any sense to me. There I was sitting in a cell for murder and for stealing and for so many things I had done, knowing full well that the next time I stepped out of this cell, it would be to go to my death. And I deserved it. So it was no surprise to me when a Roman soldier came for me and took me to Pilate. What was a surprise was when they stood me beside a man who had been beaten to a near bloody pulp. And then Pilate says to the crowd, "Who shall I let go? Shall I let Jesus go or Barabbas go?" Well, I knew they were going to let Jesus go, and I was about ready to give them a piece of my mind. But then the crowd started shouting, "Barabbas, let Barabbas go." And it got louder and louder, and finally a soldier pushed me into the crowd. Just 1 minute before, I'm in a cell ready to go to my death, and the next minute I'm free. It just didn't make any sense. So they took him to Golgotha, and I had to follow.
I crucified Jesus. You saw him. That's what the crowd wanted, and that's what they got. It was amazing. Personally, I don't think that man deserved that. But when the governor gave his sentence, that's when I began my job. You see, no man deserves that.
Yeah, I believe that Christ's suffering and the demonstration of the kind of physiologic stress that his human body was under is manifested in the Garden of Gethsemane, where it's described that he was sweating blood. And there is a well-documented medical condition in which patients who are under tremendous amount of emotional stress and physiological stress can, in fact, sweat blood, because little blood vessels within the glands burst and then the blood is expressed. The scourge involved the use of a short whip with pieces of typically metal, sometimes bone, sometimes pieces of porcelain wrapped in these leather straps, which is then utilized to come across typically the back, the shoulders, the legs of the victim. The first few passes across a particular body part would tear through the skin, the fat, but eventually, once the outer layers were torn away, it would start getting in the muscle and the tendon. And of course, along the way, you're ripping through all the blood vessels that supply all those tissues. And so you're losing blood the whole time. The plant that was described actually had a very long thorn, not the little thorns that we would think from a rose bush. These were thorns that were typically 1.5 to 2 inches in length. The scalp is one of the most vascular portions of our body. It's got a huge blood supply up there. So then having those thorns shoved down into the, down onto the bony plate would have gone through all the scalp, which in and of itself would have created a huge amount of blood loss. I've seen people actually bleed to death from just a scalp injury. So this is not a small injury to have, dozens of these things shoved into your scalp. And so that would have caused more blood loss. Typically when a victim has to carry the cross, what has been described in the literature, in actual Roman literature, is they carry the crossbar. And the crossbar was estimated to weigh about 110 pounds. And of course, if your arms are stuck out here, wrapped up on the crossbar, and you fall down, you need help getting up. You just can't get up on your own, because there's no possible way without your arms to get up. So he would have needed help getting up. If he fell over, there's a good chance that he could have hit his chest, which which then could account for the possibility of a cardiac injury. Anatomically, we consider the wrists as part of the hand. And so with the placement of the nails between the radius and the ulna, at that position, it still fits the definition of being in the hand. And it's in a position in which the nail won't rip out, which you have to have a solid point of fixation. Another interesting point about the placement of that is the median nerve goes right straight through that particular portion of the wrist. And so there would have been either destruction of the nerve or impingement of the nerve that would have created tremendous amount of pain, so that every time you try to take a breath, it'd be agonizing. You'd be pushing down on spiked feet, which of course hurt, and then you'd be hanging on spiked arms. And so you alternate from excruciating pain to excruciating pain every time you take a breath. So even if he survives the actual crucifixion, he would have had to survive what I believe to be a lethal injury from the spear to find out whether he was alive or not. What's described is the loss of water and blood, and that would entail either either a pleural effusion or pericardial effusion, and the blood would have come from either pulmonary artery, pulmonary vein, the aorta or vena cava, or the heart itself. None of those injuries, unless you're treated immediately by a trauma surgeon like myself, with all the advanced equipment that we have, would be survivable after even a few minutes. Christ, as the Son of God, could have survived anything. He chose to manifest himself as a human at that point in time and allowed himself to die. And being human at that point in time, he could not have survived this particular series of traumas. It's not possible. Christ as God could have survived anything they threw at him. But he chose to be Christ, the human, at that point in time to die for our sins. And that given that self-limitation of remaining to be human, he died. He did not survive the event. I'm profoundly impacted by it. Because I realized that the price that he paid was something I would never be willing to do for probably anybody. It's very difficult for me to even sing songs about the cross, even in worship. Because I truly do understand what he paid, the price that he paid.
I was at Golgotha that day, stationed there. We had just raised the second criminal when they brought him to me. I'll never forget the way he looked. He was beaten, spit on, whipped. He was unrecognizable as a man. It was absolutely hideous. What were left of his clothes, they just stripped away from his body. And then they threw him on the cross. And that's when I did my work. Generally, when you crucify a man, the first hand is always the most difficult. You see, a criminal will always try to get away. He will fight you. So I'd have two soldiers hold him down. But this man, he didn't fight. See, as an executioner, I've been called every name in the book. Men have yelled at me. They've pled with me. I just couldn't be prepared for that. You see, he just looked at us. He looked at me. And he said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." And he forgave me.
Forgive them. He said, "Forgive them." Who is he? Forgive them? It should have been me on that cross. I should have been the one to die. He forgave, and he took my place. He forgave. Then I watched as he took one last anguished breath and said, "It's finished." And then he died.
Surely, this man must be the Son of God.
Surely he took up our pain and bore our suffering. Yet we considered him punished by God, stricken by him, and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was on him. And by his wounds, we are healed. We all, like sheep, have gone astray. Each of us has turned to our own way. And the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed and afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before its shearers is silent, so he did not open his mouth. By oppression and judgment he was taken away. Yet who of his generation protested? For he was cut off from the land of the living. For the transgression of my people he was punished. He was assigned a grave with the wicked and with the rich in his death. Though he had done no violence, nor was any deceit in his mouth.